back to HealthLink on Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen along with you. While vascular disease afflicts millions of people and is the most common cause of death and disability in the United States. And while the most common type of vascular disease is of the coronary arteries that supply the heart muscle, there are non-cardiac vascular diseases as well affecting the circulation to the rest of the body, including the blood supply to the arms, legs, brain, kidneys, and intestines. Now, atherosclerosis, or hardening of the artery, causes most vascular disease by causing plaque to build up in the blood vessel wall and making it prone to rupture, causing serious injury, disability, and even death. And joining me this morning to help shed some more light on vascular disease and what we need to know about it is Dr. Michael Costanza, an associate professor of surgery in the Division of Vascular Surgery and Endovascular Services at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Costanza. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Help us understand a little bit better. I gave a very quick overview. What is vascular disease?
Well, I thought your introduction was great. Vascular disease is just disease of the blood vessels outside of the heart, and that can affect many different parts of the body, including the arms and the legs, like you said. It can affect the blood vessels that go to the brain and cause stroke. It can affect the largest blood vessel in the body, the aorta, and cause an aneurysm, which is an abnormal enlargement of the blood vessel that can actually rupture, and that's a fatal problem. And then it can cause blockages in the leg arteries or blood vessels that can lead to difficulty walking and even in severe cases lead to amputation. So it really has widespread effects all throughout the body.
What's the mechanism for it developing, though? And in all these different areas of the body, is it the same mechanism that causes it?
The vast majority of vascular disease is caused, like you said, by atherosclerosis, which is a buildup of plaque on the inside of the blood vessel. And what that does is it decreases the area that the blood has to go through. And so in the legs, when that happens, the muscles, when they exercise, they want more blood flow because they need more energy to do the work of walking or running. And when the plaque builds up, it narrows that blood flow so that they can't get the energy they need. And that's why they experience pain when they try to walk.
So the muscles are starving in this case for the
right.
oxygen that it need that they need because not enough blood is bringing enough oxygen.
Right, exactly. And the same thing can happen in the blood vessels to the brain. In the brain, another condition can happen where the plaque that builds up can actually break off or pieces of it or blood clots that form on the plaque can break off. And when they break off, they go immediately into the brain and cause a stroke. So depending on where the blockages are, it can have different effects in terms of the consequences.
But it sounds to me like, just help me understand, there's two different things that can happen. You have the potential for the actual blood vessel itself to rupture and break itself in
right.
a stroke. Or you can also have a plaque that creates what they call a thrombus, a little piece of something that causes a blockage in
right.
another blood vessel.
You know, stroke is always a little bit confusing because, mm-hmm. like you said, there can be what we call hemorrhagic stroke, which is a bleeding stroke, which is usually caused by smaller blood vessel problems that get weak and can burst. But the vast majority of strokes are caused by what we call ischemic strokes, meaning a lack of blood flow due to blockages from these plaques that break off and break free. So stroke is always a little bit confusing in that sense.
So before we get into the specific types of difficulties that you face in your clinics, basically, who is at risk for this and how does it evolve over time?
Well, vascular disease is typically a disease of older people. And as we get older, the risk for developing these plaques in our arteries increases. And so age is one of the primary risk factors. And then the other risk factors are the same as for heart disease, namely smoking, high cholesterol, diabetes, lack of exercise, obesity, all of those factors go in. So there's not one specific factor that makes a difference, but a combination of all those factors allow the disease to build up over many years and then have problems as we get older.
So it's kind of like cholesterol building up the plaque. Is that true? Is it the same thing as we're always talking about with heart disease, that the cholesterol causes the plaque to build in the artery and potentially creating these same
That's right. That's right. It's a long process that occurs over many years, and it's a culmination of all of these risk factors put together.
Why did they call it hardening of the arteries? The arteries don't actually changing.
Well, in fact, it's a very accurate term because, having operated on these vessels, they actually do turn very, very hard. And they found that the compounds that are in the vessels from this buildup are actually very similar to the compounds in our bones. So you can imagine how hard these vessels can get in severe disease. So it's a very accurate term.
That's very interesting. I had no idea. I just keep thinking of a clogged pipe. But not that the pipe itself would change.
Right. It's a disease. It's truly a disease of the vessel itself.
So help us understand specifically the kinds of problems you see. For example, what is an abdominal aortic aneurysm? And when do you see it? And how would you know you had it?
Well, the aorta is the largest blood vessel in the body, and it starts at the heart. It goes through the chest and then into the abdomen, where it gives off the vessels to the intestines, and then it branches into two vessels, one for each leg, around the level of the belly button or so. And the abdominal aorta is the vessel that is most at risk for developing an aneurysm, which is just a Greek word for an enlargement of the vessel. And we don't really understand why some people develop aneurysms, but some people are born with a predisposition to have a weak area in that vessel. And when you couple that with some risk factors like smoking and atherosclerosis, that vessel can actually enlarge in that area of weakness. Just like an inner tube of a tire, when it has a weak area, it kind of blisters out and has a bulge there. Over time, if that weak area gets to be very large, the tension can build up so much that the walls will actually give. And when you have a large vessel like that that breaks open, there's usually fatal bleeding. And even patients that make it to the hospital with that bleeding, many of them don't survive because there's been so much bleeding already.
So how would you know? Or in other words, is it just something that happens and there's no cure, no way to treat it?
Yeah, well, that's why they're so dangerous, and that's why aneurysms are actually one of the leading causes of death, especially in older men, is because they don't cause any symptoms usually until it's too late. And unless you have a test that looks for an aneurysm or another test looking for something else where you happen to find the aneurysm, you may not know that you have one, until it's too late.
But if it's found, either accidentally or for some other reason, it can be operated on successfully.
Right. Aneurysms are, when we find them, we can almost always fix them. When we find them after bleeding, it's the opposite. So it really speaks to the importance of early detection for that.
How about the endovascular aortic aneurysm? What's that?
Endovascular aortic aneurysm repair is a way that we have now, about for the last 20 years, of repairing them without doing a large abdominal incision. We can go through very small incisions or even through a needle puncture and put in a stent that goes on the inside of the blood vessel and actually seals to the blood vessel above and below the aneurysm so that the blood goes through the stent and doesn't go into the aneurysm, and therefore the aneurysm itself will be completely excluded and no longer at risk for breaking open.
And that occurs in what kinds of cases? In other words, why would you do that?
Well, it's a much less invasive procedure overall, and so we try to do it in, most of the patients that we see now, and we can usually do that procedure, depending on anatomy, in about 60 or 70% of patients, and the patients go home the day later or 2 days later versus a week in the hospital. There's a much lesser chance of bleeding or infection or problems with the surgery by doing it that way.
But where would you find, what does it mean when you say endovascular? Where would it be in the body?
Endovascular aneurysm repair just refers to any aneurysm Yes. that's repaired with a stent rather than having open surgery. So Okay. it most commonly refers to the abdominal aortic aneurysm, but it can refer to aneurysms in the chest or any place in the body that
so
has
it's
aneurysms.
It's more of a methodology for treating an aneurysm.
Correct, you're right. It's a general term, right?
What other kinds of procedures or situations do you find that you're seeing in general?
Well, the most common manifestation of vascular disease is what we call peripheral arterial disease, which is blockages in the blood vessels that go to the legs, which would usually have people have difficulty walking, like I explained before. And so some people think that as they get older, they're just not supposed to walk as far. But in fact, many of those people have peripheral arterial disease and actually can be treated either with medicine or with interventions that can improve their walking ability.
And what kinds of interventions in that case? Would stents also be a treatment?
Yeah, often we can use balloons and or stents that can actually open those narrowed blood vessels and improve the blood flow so that the muscles are getting more blood flow and people can walk farther. In severe cases, sometimes we have to do surgery, but usually that's if we're trying to save the leg because the disease is so severe. Sometimes even medicine can work to improve the walking distance because the medicine can make the blood flow smoother through these areas of narrowing.
So there are a number of treatments available.
That's right.
Getting back to this idea of diagnosis, though, obviously if you can't walk, you know, or if you have pain in your legs, you know. What other methods are there for determining what exactly is going on for any of these vascular issues?
Well, for peripheral arterial disease, often that can be diagnosed just in the office by doing an exam of the pulses in the legs, and sometimes we even do blood pressure measurements in the legs that can give a very accurate diagnosis. For the carotid artery disease, the risk of stroke, and the abdominal aneurysm disease, usually we do ultrasound exams to see if that disease is present, and that's a very easy exam to go through. It just involves some jelly on the skin, and we can get excellent pictures of those vessels and determine if disease is present or not.
How about CTs and MRIs? Do you use those as well?
We usually reserve CT scans and MRIs for people that we strongly suspect have disease or we know have disease based on other findings, and we want to get a better picture of the actual anatomy. But in terms of just detecting the disease, we find ultrasound works very well because it's non-invasive, it doesn't involve any radiation, and it can be done very quickly.
I read in your in some of your literature that you also see a lot of people with foot problems. Now, who are those people and what kinds of problems do they have?
Yeah, there's sort of two groups of people that have foot problems. One is people with diabetes, and they may or may not have vascular disease as well. But diabetics, based on their overall disease, are much more prone to get infections and non-healing ulcers in their feet. And part of that is because their nerve endings are not as good because of the diabetes, so they may not sense that they have a blister or a small callus that's growing. And part of that is that they don't have as much immune function there. And then the other group we see is people with severe blood vessel disease in the legs, that the disease can get so bad that the blood flow to the foot and the tissues of the foot is not enough to keep those tissues alive. And that's sometimes what we refer to as gangrene, which just means non-living tissue. And that is usually the result of severe vascular disease.
And what types of treatment can you offer at that point?
Usually, if it's just an infection, we can drain the infection and get the tissue around it to heal. That's if somebody has good blood supply. If their blood supply is very poor, we usually have to do a balloon angioplasty or stent or even surgery in some cases to improve the blood flow so that the foot can heal.
Do the balloon angioplasties and the stents have a long-term value and effect, or are they really just a short-term fix?
It all depends on where the balloons and the stents are used, and that is usually a function of how big the blood vessel is. So the bigger the vessel, the better the balloon and the stent work. And
it sounds to me like, based on everything you've said and so many problems that can occur as a result of vascular disease, that screening is of the utmost importance. In the very little time we have left, who should be screened?
Well, we'd like to screen people that have multiple risk factors. In other words, people over the age of 60, people with diabetes, a history of smoking, a history of family members with aneurysms. Those are the people we really try to target with screening.
And if you screened once, do you need to be screened annually?
If you have a screening and everything checks out okay, you really don't need any more screening.
So that's basically an important thing to remember. If you have any of these risk factors, get screened and don't worry about it after.
That's right.
If there are no problems. Well, Dr. Michael Costanza, Associate Professor of Surgery in the Division of Vascular Surgery and Endovascular Services at Upstate Medical University, thanks so much for coming in today and helping us. We've got to take a short break, but we'll be right back with more HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.